Hi there, short film fans, and welcome back to the Cameo Launch Short Film Podcast. It's our first episode of a new season and our opener of 2023. And this episode, we're talking to Mar Bell, co-founder and editor-in-chief of short and indie film platform Director's Notes. Since 2006, this platform's work has included highlighting cutting-edge shorts and features across genres and publishes filmmaker interviews every week. Their work lifts the veil on the issues, pitfalls, techniques, and opportunities in the filmmaking landscape and has led to partnerships with some of the biggest film festivals in the country. Mar Bell joined me in the pod to talk about the genesis of Director's Notes, the changing face of short film, and what the future may hold for filmmakers working in this space. Listen and enjoy. Mar Bell, thank you so much for taking some time out to talk to us today. How have you been?
Yeah, good. My absolute pleasure. Thanks for the invite, Nigel. I was very pleased when you invited me on after, you know, we got to hang out with each other at Aesthetica. Yeah. So, yeah, which is very rare because I tend to do all my things online. So it's always nice when I can meet people face to face.
Absolutely. And what a great place to meet face to face as well. It's a fantastic festival. The vibe there kind of marshals people towards collaboration, towards really finding out about each other, into really getting into what makes the medium of short film so great. It's a wonderful atmosphere, and I was very, very glad to meet you within that. Can you talk to us a little bit about what Director's Notes is, what it does, how you came to establish it, and what drove you to do it?
Yeah, so Director's Notes, I suppose the easiest way that I kind of tend to describe it now is we're kind of like an ongoing, rolling online film festival. But a really important part of that is, alongside our curation, is the in-depth interviews we do with filmmakers. So basically, we publish a new film on our site every day, Monday through to Friday. But alongside that always goes this in-depth interview, which, you know, the way that I like to kind of think of it is it's kind of like the questions that a filmmaker would ask another filmmaker. So, you know, how an idea developed, you know, kind of how they got the money, you know, what equipment they used, that kind of thing. So that's what we do. And the kind of the genesis of that. So the site started in 2006, bizarrely enough, which feels like an age ago now. And it started because me and my co-founder, Rob Monday, when we came out of university from studying film, this is kind of, you know, I think YouTube is, you know, maybe about 2 years old. Vimeo really hasn't taken off, especially not as a home for filmmakers at that point. And so we kind of came out with no connections to anybody in the film industry going, we really want to make films. How do we do that? Where do we get this information? Because, you know, aside from directors' commentaries on DVDs, there wasn't really anywhere that was that accessible to us. And so we made Director's Notes really as a, you know, a way for us to grill filmmakers about their practices. And then, you know, we both fell in love with curation and the site grew from there. But yeah, when we initially started, we were just like a weekly podcast. Okay. That we would do. And now, like I say, we put out a new interview every day, and we work with festivals, and we put on our events. And so, yeah, we've kind of really grown through the years.
Right. That's amazing. And, you know, I think so many of the organizations that really do make a dent start at a grassroots level and just kind of start with an idea between 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people. And, you know, it's difficult to keep those going with the film industry, the way it works, and the routes into it can often seem quite blocked quite a lot of the time. What was the landscape you discovered when you first started Director's Notes? What were some of the most common difficulties or hurdles? What were sort of the most common routes into the industry at that point?
Well, you know, when we started, I think, you know, one of the major issues were, you know, filmmakers really didn't want to have their films online at that point. Again, there wasn't a proven model for any success coming from your film being online, and I think everybody saw it as a route to, you know, just your film being pirated. However, so like I said, when we started with the podcast, it took a lot of convincing, but we eventually got there. So what we would do is on a Wednesday, we would drop a clip from the film, very rarely the full film, and it was, you know, in glorious 320 by 240 resolution,
right?
That would drop down into the podcast feed on the Wednesday, and then on the Thursday you would have the interview, so that there was a frame of reference for that, and that was kind of how we were getting the clips out then.
Right.
So I suppose, yeah, that was the initial hurdle. And then once we had enough of those under our belts, then filmmakers could really see, I suppose, the worth in those interviews. Because also as well, especially if you're looking at short film, now, like, we feature features, but the vast majority of the work that we feature is of the shorter form, you know, music videos and branded and stuff. But especially back then, nobody was interviewing short film filmmakers particularly. So, yeah, there'd be, you know, interviews with big, you know, blockbuster directed or, you know, cult indie filmmakers, you know, like a Jim Jarmusch or something like that. But nobody was really interviewing and digging into what short filmmakers were doing there. So I think then once filmmakers could see the level of detail we went into and the care that we went into, then there was a shift where it went from us scrabbling around each week to do our weekly podcast to go, all right, what film are we going to talk about this week? Oh my God, what are we going to do? To having a glut of stuff being sent to us, because we were one of those few destinations at that point. Now I know there's a lot more other sites, but we were like one of the few, if not, you know, maybe even the first, who were really digging into that level of film.
Right, right. And once that shift kind of occurred, did you note that filmmakers would kind of make contact with each other via the platform that you'd established and via the associated events you might have had?
Yeah, so yeah, it's kind of a mix of that, because then, you know, I suppose you've got then happening at the same time of that, Vimeo, although obviously that's kind of tends to be shifting nowadays, but kind of becoming the de facto platform for if you're serious about films and you're not just throwing up, you know, kind of, you know, prank videos or whatever, you know, what Vimeo was known for, you know, the Charlie bit my finger and all that kind of stuff back in the day, that you would go to Vimeo. So there was a community there that was built because everybody was commenting on everybody else's videos, you know, so you would see a video that we had, or a film rather, that we had featured on Director's Notes linked through to our interview. And then obviously we've got the Director's Notes channel over there. So that really became a hub where people would find us as well. And then, you know, you were talking about kind of milestones as well. I think one of the things as well that we found when we first started, and it's, you know, it's, I suppose it's kind of still there to a certain degree, but nowhere near as much, was I think film festivals didn't used to take online seriously.
That's right.
Or there was an idea of that, maybe that there was a threat from online, that, you know, so it was a completely different world there. And that, like, even pre-pandemic, that had already started to shift, I would say,
yeah,
you know, in the last, right, you know, in the last decade, that started to shift. But then when the pandemic kicked in, then suddenly all the film festivals, which were physical and obviously couldn't be physical anymore, that completely accelerated this kind of symbiosis, I would say, between online and film festivals. So, you know, I suppose, you know, quite often we work with filmmakers, you know, who are thinking about online, or before that, who are thinking about online as the end of their journey. But quite often now, we'll work with filmmakers who will come to Director's Notes right at the beginning of their festival journey to either go, look, I know that I want to release online with Director's Notes when I get to that point, or they'll come to us and what we'll do is we'll do our early interview and we'll kind of drop those with like a trailer or teasers from the film, because they're using that to help bolster their film festival submissions, to show that there is, you know, there is interest in this film, there's respected interest in this film. And it also, because of the type of interviews we do, it allows them to go into detail about who they are as filmmakers and the talent that they put into their craft.
Right, right, right. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. And at what point did film festivals start taking note of what you were bringing to the table? Because as you mentioned, you know, there was a kind of slow uptake in terms of embracing online submissions and so on and so forth. A lot of what you were doing was online, and you were bringing a lot of these guys together, sharing their experiences and getting them to really be forthright about what their visions are, what their ambitions are, what their motivations are behind the particular film that they're making. At what point did festivals start to take note and think, actually, this is a really good way of narrowing out the field to see whose work we really want to feature at our festival?
I don't know. So that happened before the pandemic. Let's say 5-6 years ago, really, because then you're getting festivals who were seeing that, oh, these are the, you know, for want of a better term, these are the tastemakers, the people who are going out and discovering this work. And I suppose it was an easy kind of shortcut for them to go, all right, okay, so let's see what's on director's notes, because we know that they've got a curatorial voice that is, you know, like this. So, and we respect their decision. And so therefore, then we'll look at those filmmakers and we'll maybe approach those filmmakers for our festival. But then, of course, when the pandemic happened, you know, and the film festival suddenly had to pivot to being online, that's when our associations with festivals really, really ramped up. So before then, you know, we'd always, you know, I'd always get invited to be on juries and, you know, be part of the judging. They'd all be invited for director's notes to go and cover a festival. So like we've been covering London Film Festival since before the site started, for instance. But then, you know, once the pandemic happened and festivals were forced to play in the online space that they'd kind of been a bit hesitant to before, then I think they immediately then looked around and went, oh, well, who's been doing online forever?
Gotcha.
And we're an obvious pick, because that's what we've been doing for the last, 16, coming up to 17 years.
Right. And, you know, I guess at this point it must be, well, I wouldn't say old hat, but it must be kind of in your bones at this point in terms of being that trusted voice that established film festivals go to for that kind of guidance. And while kind of what you described, I suppose, for want of a better phrase, comes from humble beginnings with just you and Rob Monday. So for you, at what point did you get to the point where you were starting to have people buy into the vision of what Director's Notes was doing and really dedicate themselves to it and to start building a team that you could rely on to really accomplish the goals that you set out to accomplish?
Well, the thing is, like, we've always had, so yeah, Rob and I founded Director's Notes, but we've always had, you know, people, whether they be, you know, guest writers or filmmakers, who, because they like what we do and our work, who wanted to be involved. And this is when, you know, we were still doing director's notes kind of as a part-time thing, and before there was any revenue stream that was coming in from it at all. So people were doing it for the love of it. So like we've had filmmakers who are still with us today, who would do festival reports for us back then when we used to do things like that, or would go, oh, I've seen this really cool film at a film festival, you know, are you up for me writing for it about you? And then our other team members, they have kind of come from recommendations, actually, mainly. So like James, who's been with us for, you know, many, many years, about half a decade now, I think a bit more. He's coming up to, I think, his 500th article he's written for us. So James has been with us for some time. So he was recommended to us by Neil Fox of, I don't know if you know the Cinematologists podcast at all.
That I haven't come across, no.
Oh, right, okay. You should definitely check them out. They're great. Right, okay. So because Neil also teaches film at Falmouth. And so James was a student there, and he was moving to Brighton, which is where I'm based. So Neil was like, oh, I've got this student who's really into film. I think he'd be great for director's notes. And so James, you know, James came on, did a bit more and like kind of became part of the team. So we get a lot of recommendations. Redmond, he came from I met his sister, who's a producer at a film festival, and she was like saying, oh, I love director's notes. My brother would most probably be interested in writing to you. So that's how Redmond came to us. So up until this day, it's been very, kind of recommendation led, and, you know, we'll kind of, you know, try each other out and then see how we get on and, you know, how committed people want to be to director's notes and how regular they want to be. So that's where we've built it so far. We're now in a stage actually where we're starting to look kind of outside that immediate network, which is interesting. So you don't have those recommendations, so it's kind of like more of a, you know, first dates type thing,
right?
So, yeah, okay. we're doing that now.
Right. And what are some of the biggest challenges with that, and some of the biggest challenges in getting to where you are, but also some of the biggest challenges in you know, kind of expanding what you do and how you do it?
I think, I mean, to be completely honest, I think it's, you know, a major one is, you know, the control freak in me.
Okay.
So, you know, kind of, because like I said, for many, many years, I was definitely writing the majority of the interviews that were on director's notes, as well as doing all the curation, which, you know, I still heavily do. I haven't written, I don't really write that often now, but I do a lot of the, you know, the majority of the editing as well. So it's that, because it's been something that, you know, I've had for, you know, over a decade and a half, and I know what the quality level should be, and I know the type of questions that I want us to ask and the depth that I want us to go into. It's that, you know, I suppose it's that training up, which sounds, you know, very, you know, very grand, but, you know, kind of getting everybody to be as bought in to that and being able to trust them, or feel that I can trust them, so that they take the ethos of director's notes into every interview and into all the curation. Because that's the thing, like, even if, you know, if you've been following director's notes for any period of time, even if you don't necessarily love every film that we put out there, because, you know, everyone's tastes are different, you know that there is a quality, and you know that we believe in all the films that we put in there. And you know that, like, even, you know, I like to think that even if you watch a film on director's notes that you absolutely hate, you know that if you read the interview, there's going to be something in there that's going to be relevant, that's going to teach you something, that's going to be a quality interview that goes beyond, you know, the initial first surface level questions that you see on quite a lot of other sites.
Absolutely. And for anyone not necessarily familiar with that ethos, how would you describe it to them? What would be some of the characteristics that you'd look for in a short film that you'd say, okay, yes, let's feature that, let's find out more about that filmmaker? In what way does a film need to speak to you in order to get your attention in that way?
Okay, well, actually, you know, the kind of clue's there in your question. The film needs to speak to us in some way. So, like, you know, and I'm sure as you do, you know, we see hundreds, if not thousands, of films a year. You know, I program for Aesthetica and program for other festivals as well. So I see, you know, submissions from them, as well as all the submissions that come into us, as well as all the things that I watch on top of that. So it has to speak to us. It has to, you know, like, there's no longer, I think, you know, when we first started in those first few years, there was an idea of, okay, well, the quality's not quite there. But the quality, you know, that's by the by, that's a given now, that a film is going to hit a certain quality. So it has to engage us emotionally, or, yeah, you know, maybe that there's, you know, because like I said, we do a lot of, say, music videos and branded and experimental as well. So maybe it's not narratively that it will engage us. Maybe it's the techniques of, like, wow, we haven't seen that before. We've seen that, but we haven't seen it used like that before, if you see what I mean. But then also, if you've got a narrative, it's got to draw us in. It's got to hopefully, you know, and I know it's not very helpful for filmmakers for me to say this, but, you know, something that we haven't seen before, you know, that idea of, like, wow, or it's a story that we've seen, you know, 1,000 times, but you've taken a slightly different perspective on it. You've shifted the focus. Maybe it's a character who would normally be a side character, and you've taken that perspective, and that, you know, that makes the whole situation, you know, fresh and new again. Or yeah, it's coming from a part of a world which again is one of the great things about us being based online, and that our submitters come from all over the world, is, you know, it's part of the world where you don't normally see those stories, or, you know, stories told. So we get a new fresh perspective in that way. Basically, when I watch something that comes into our submissions, what I want to be doing, and this happens, you know, a lot more often than you might think, given the amount of films we see, is I'm watching it and I'm going, please don't fuck this up. Sorry.
Yeah.
But please don't, yeah, please, yeah, don't mess it,
yeah,
up. Please
land this plane, I beg you.
Please stick the landing, because I'm so into this. And then I'm watching it and I instantly then want to share it with the team. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's how I know I've got gold. I instantly want to share it. I want to look and see where it's played. And, like, although we don't require an exclusive premiere, but we do premiere films online, and that could be, you know, a half an hour premiere, but, you know, that idea of I'm watching something and I go, I want to be the first one to share this.
Yeah.
that just hits you viscerally. So yeah, you know, I know that that's not a, you know, slot tab A into slot B kind of instructions for filmmakers, but it has to have that feeling. And also, I think one of the things, and again, I'm by far not the first person to say this, but there's a strange thing about specificity in filmmaking, as in, like, if you're telling a story that you know really well, like, bizarrely, you know, the more general you try to make it, generally the weaker those films are.
Yeah.
Yeah, the more you're trying to please them, the more specific you are to the story you want to tell, your perspective on it, the perspective of the characters, bizarrely, those are the ones that resonate the most, even though it could be a life that I know absolutely nothing about, I have no experience of, those are the ones that really kind of hit and stick with you.
Absolutely. And you know, there is kind of a risk to that, because if, you know, you're that specific, then maybe it doesn't resonate with as many people as you want it to, or somebody sees it and they're like, yeah, I didn't quite get that, and they move on. But for the people that do get it, or that it does reach, who may or may not have that kind of experience or have lived that kind of life, it hits them hard. And those are the ones that really do stay with you. I mean, with all the films that that we've reviewed, you know, I'd stand behind my pick of all of them, but there are some that really stand out, and the ones that do are in ways which introduce me to a new perspective or a new life experience or a new approach to culture, even if I'm familiar with a particular culture. So those are the things I find really interesting.
Yeah, but one of the things I'd also say is, like, you know, talking about short films in particular, you know, there isn't, I mean, yes, it is possible to make money from shorts, but it isn't really possible in general, as a general rule of thumb. Yeah, most short filmmakers don't make money from their shorts, really. What they're doing is they're learning their craft and they're building their skills up. And, you know, and a ton of filmmakers we work with, they make their money making music videos and branded content. Yeah. So if you're going to take the time to, you know, we know it's a lot of hard work to put together a short film. If you're going to take the time to do that, then that is the time to take risks, to find your voice. Yeah, to, you know, to do those things that you can't generally do on projects, you know, that are completely funded or that you're doing, you know, as gigs for other people, really. Because that is when, that is how you kind of build the aesthetic that is you, that is saleable down the road, because people, you're the only one who can do that. But you need to be able to reach that point, you need to experiment. And you need to play, and you need to, you know, stretch that muscle and hone that muscle and build it.
Yeah, absolutely. And to that end, can you tell us any success stories that come to mind with people whose films you have featured and interviews you have given that have really taken that kind of ethos on board and continue to push their way forward?
Immediate of mind is, because he's got a film in cinema now, Ennis Main, Mark Jenkin. So our relationship with Mark starts, you know, even before Director's Notes. So Director's Notes kind of had its roots as a section in a magazine called Showreel way back when. In the early 2000s. Yeah. And I did an interview in Showreel with Mark for his short film called, you know, The Man Who Needed a Traffic Light. And we've kind of, you know, through the years kept in touch. So we featured, you know, I think he was one of our first, he might have been podcast episode number 6, I think. We featured his film, The 12-Inch Pianist. And then, you know, we featured Bronco's House, which was a kind of precursor almost to Bates, which obviously, you know, did fantastic. And now Ennis Main, we'll wait to see how well that's doing. But, you know, everybody seems to absolutely love that film, and rightly so. And he's a filmmaker who is very, very singular. You know, Bate, which did so well at the BAFTAs and everywhere, and played Cannes and stuff like that. You know, he's processing the film for that himself at home. Wow. And that was something that he'd been doing in his earlier films as well. You know, I remember an interview with him, I think it might have been for Bronco's House, and he was talking about, maybe it was Happy Christmas, but anyway, talking about, you know, processing with, you know, coffee granules to get the colors, you know, the colors right in the film footage. So he's always been a very singular filmmaker. And he's always, you know, I suppose, you know, you've stayed true to what it is that he loves in cinema and his approach to cinema. So, you know, that's been great. You know, Jeannie Finlay, I don't know if you know her, the documentary filmmaker. So recently she did the Game of Thrones, The Last Watch documentary, which looked at all the seven heads of departments.
Yeah.
The Games of Thrones. And she had a film called Seahorse that was out in 2019 as well. So we've been featuring her. So she had, I think it was for BBC, she had like a one-hour doc called Teenland that she had done, and she had Goth Cruise after that, and then Sound It Out, which she crowdfunded and went to South by Southwest and the Great Hip Hop Hoax. And, so, and again, she's been making these, you know, fantastically insightful and entertaining documentaries for, well, decades now, and has been honing, although, you know, I was, you know, like, just like Mark, I always felt that she immediately had a voice, but has been honing that voice. And that is a voice that has become saleable, if you see what I mean. Like, yeah, you know, with her being brought on to, you know, work on Game of Thrones, which, let's face it, at that point was the biggest TV show in existence on the planet. Absolutely. So, you know, it's the idea of, like, you do this work and you find out what your perspective and what your approach is to this work. And then in the early days, it might seem that, oh, you should be adapting yourself to the industry. But if you can, like, if you can build, and I know, you know, it's easier said than done, if you can build a career that can sustain you through the years, then, you know, quite often the industry comes around to you.
Yeah, no, that's a very interesting point. It's a very interesting point. But no, that can often be a long, hard road for a lot of people. I mean, filmmaking, especially in the UK, isn't known for being that lucrative. But, you know, so if you're going to do it, it's got to be something that you feel in your bones that you have to do. And even when you do love it and you do commit to it, oftentimes there can be bumps in the road, there can be a hardening of circumstances, things beyond your control, and it can be very easy to get to a point where you go, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? How often do you come across filmmakers who sometimes hit that wall? And in those instances, do you or can you offer the kind of moral support that kind of reorients them to a certain degree? You've spoken to a lot of people over the years, you've watched a lot of films, and obviously you've got a good grasp of what the film landscape in the UK is. So you'll have some really valuable perspectives for these people. So in what instances are you able to provide that kind of insight in order to support them? And how important is it to have organizations like yours that can develop the kinds of relationships that allows you to actually reach people in that way?
I mean, you know, to be blunt, I suppose, you know, insight isn't going to pay anybody's mortgage for them. But what we do is, look, if you are, you know, if you're like, we absolutely love our alum directors. And so we are always there to support them. However, though, that doesn't mean that we will blind support a filmmaker just because we featured them before. We have to, you know, each piece of work needs to stand on its own. But when it does, we will gladly be there. And now, again, because we've been around for so long, there's a certain, you know, I suppose, kind of weight that comes from our recommendations and exposure that you get from being on director's notes. So, okay, so a recent example is there's a filmmaker who we featured, I think, a couple of weeks ago, actually, called Greg Hall, who we featured him. And again, actually, we featured Greg Hall. He did his first feature called The Plague way back in 2006. It might have even been 2005. I remember I featured that in Showreel magazine, and we featured it early on the site. And so he recently came back to director's notes with a new project called Baby Boy, which is like, it's a white knuckle ride into like hedonism and violence. It's an amazing piece of work. But you know, and he's, you know, he's been doing some other things along the way, but you know, he spoke to us about, and you know, it comes up in our interview, about the difficulty of being in it for the long haul. But you know, what we can do as director's notes, as well as, you know, being able to, I suppose, be there, like you said, encourage and, be there if anybody wants to sound anything out, is that we are there and, we have persisted and maintained through the years to be able to get to our size so that, when Greg came to us with his new project, we're there, we're ready for him. The project's fantastic. We can support that and, give it as much of a push and get it out there as, as much as possible. And so that's what we do for our filmmakers. And one of the things that we've been doing, again, as long as the site's been going pretty much, is things like, so for instance, the Reading and Leeds Music Festivals, unbeknownst to most people, they have a cinema tent that plays there each year when the bands finish. So, and we've been programming that since the site started. And we always program that predominantly from our alumni directors. So that's what we, and then we do guest programs like I said, I'm one of the programmers at Aesthetica, but then even before I was a programmer at Aesthetica, we were invited to do guest programs for them. And we do them for Bolton Film Festival and other film festivals. And so we always reach into our pool of alumni first for that. So when a filmmaker has their film on director's notes, it's not necessarily just that's the be all and end all, although we'd love it if everybody felt like that, but it's that we will then quite often, several years after we first featured the film, we'll then reach into, so for instance, Bolton a few years ago, we had a coming of age guest program that we did. So we looked through our archive of our favorite coming of age films that would work in that program, and we put those together. We had a Black Lives Matter one that we did, at the height of all that was kicking off during lockdown, and we go to our archives and pull that out. So that's one of the things as we move forward, and we're going to do more offline events that we cleverly started just before lockdown. So brilliant timing then. But we will always go back to that pool so that what we're doing is we're continually supporting our filmmakers. We're going, thank you for choosing Director's Notes as a home for your film. Here is something else that we're going to offer you because we love your film and we love you as a filmmaker. So, those opportunities, we're always offering them, to our alum directors.
That's brilliant. That is brilliant. And you touched a little bit on what you're aiming to do next. Can we go a little bit deeper into future plans? Any plans for expansion? So you've mentioned that you've already been programming cinema tents at festivals, at music festivals, and that you're planning more in-person things. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the specific plans you've got, if you're able to talk about them?
Well, I mean, kind of in a vague kind of way, we've been talking to other festivals about us doing more, because as well as doing the jury stuff, I sit on panels because, I don't know how many interviews I've done, something like 5,000 interviews or something ridiculous by now. So, so we do a lot of that under the Director's Notes banner. We're going to be doing more offline stuff, be those a mix of screenings as well as kind of meetups. So, you were talking about the whole filmmaker community aspect of thing. So that's something that, while we've been, always nurtured that online, that's something that we want to do more of offline, despite my desire to sit behind my computer, because I like it here.
It does look very comfortable. You've got all the plants and everything. It's a nice environment. I can see why you want to stay there. So with all of that going on, you touch a little bit on some potential within short film itself. So we're creating environments in which people can connect, in which people can actually experience film. And you touched earlier a little bit about the old adage of the fact that short films don't make money. With the way that technology has been changing and the way that options for presenting short films cinematically has been changing with the explosion of film festivals, do you think that is always going to be the case, or do you see avenues emerging, if only in their infancy, where there is a potential for a commercial opportunity within short film that would actually allow people to make money doing that?
Well, you know, you've seen, you know, things like, you know, Netflix, like, you know, Love, Death and Robots, and other series that are looking at shorts and, you know, packaging them together. And, you know, and there are these kind of sporadic things of, you know, where you'll get, you know, shorts that are playing in front of features. So I think people have started taking shorts a lot more seriously than they did. But oh, that actually saying that, I don't even necessarily think that it was people that weren't taking shorts seriously. I think it's like people didn't really know about shorts, really. They thought that a film was this feature length thing, even though, you know, obviously film's roots have always been in
In
shorts,
shorts, yeah.
really. So there are those opportunities, and there are, you know, we see, you know, these various platforms popping up, whether they're, you know, kind of, well, I suppose, you know, they're mobile, or, you know, TV apps and such that are, you know, that have got, you know, kind of paywalls so that filmmakers can do revenue shares, you know, and there's things like also as well, you know, the big behemoth, you know, the world's second biggest, you know, search platform, YouTube, you know, filmmakers. Are like so for instance so we in the last year started our YouTube channel there, and so there are avenues there for revenue shares there because you know they're a paying platform, and a lot of, actually saying that, and a lot of the platforms and this whole creator economy thing are now seeing that, you know, whereas they've had all the content for free for years forever, they're now seeing that they're having to, you know, dip into those profits to share with the people who are creating the work. So there are avenues out there. And so I see that, you know, increasing, but, you know, I suppose it's kind of, you know, depends on, you know, what the level of saturation is. You know, if you think about just your average consumer, like, you know, not people like us who, you know, live and die for, you know, short and indie films, you know, there's, you know, already coming in is the idea of subscription fatigue. Really. So like how many things outside of, you know, Netflix and Disney are you going to subscribe for? So that's you know, that's something that the you know these platforms that are collecting shorts are going to also have to contend with. But then also I think that there is nothing, you know, like we were saying earlier about, you know, meeting each other aesthetica, there's nothing that can, you know, beat those, you know, those in-person events. You know, like I
Absolutely.
was, you know, I went to, there's a great film festival here called Rocks that they do like Brighton Rocks, London Rocks, and Hastings Rocks. And I've attended that, and the atmosphere there is fantastic. And the support that you end up building, you know, filmmakers build their support networks there of other filmmakers. So which is why, you know, as I said earlier, we're looking to do more offline events so that we can have those spaces. And, you know, with those kinds of things, you know, if we get those and us and others get those up and running, then there's to the correct level, then there's also, you know, kind of revenue opportunities there because, you know, people, especially new filmmakers, want to see, you know, the journeys and hear about the journeys that established filmmakers have gone on, and that's, you know, there's a value to that as well. So there are all these various avenues, but I think that I don't know if your average filmmaker is necessarily going to be able to live off their shorts. At least, you know, not necessarily unless they have a wildly successful, you know, first short or second short, it might be more difficult. But you know, there are avenues out there.
Yeah, and I think you've pretty much hit the nail on the head actually, because I mean, outside of short film, I think feature film is struggling to kind of find its feet in the way that on-demand video is going and subscription services and all that kind of thing, and finding that balance between cinema and what you see online. You know, you've seen people who have set up their streaming services and have gone all in on that, and then, you know, often to the detriment of what they're putting out in cinemas. Other people that have kind of stuck with the traditional cinema model, seeing you know, success it when they hit it big, but also kind of missing out on some of those opportunities that might present themselves online as well. I think one of the things that's interesting to me is that short filmmakers, possibly more than ever before, I think are more included in that calculus and more included in that conversation, just because of the fact that short films become ubiquitous as an online thing, but as you say, subscription fatigue is now starting to set in, which may well push them into a more of a theatrical space, presenting opportunities they might not have had before. If people start to develop, say, an actual theatrical model for their short films, or if they have more of a hybrid strategy for just generally putting their films out outside of a festival strategy, in what way do you think you might find yourself working with filmmakers if they start approaching things in that way?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Well, you know, that's something that we already do. You know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, quite often we'll work with filmmakers while their films are still on their, you know, festival runs and not ready to be fully online. So, for instance, recently, again, this was last week, week before, we premiered a film online called Do Not Touch from the Newman Brothers. Great, great comedy film. And they initially came to us like last year while the film was still on its festival run, and so we did one of our deep dive interviews as we always do, and published that with just the trailer of the film, which, you know, then the brothers were able to, you know, point to that when they're in their press pack and when they're submitting to other festivals to help get kind of, you know, traction and eyes on the film and more selections. And then when they were ready for the film to come online, they reached out to us with plenty of time. It's one thing that I need to say, filmmakers, plenty of time. We're always really busy, but they reached out to us. And so we agreed on a premiere date for the film to go online, went back to them with some additional questions for the interview that, you know, spoke to their time on the festival circuit and, you know, what new projects they had coming up, and then were able to help re-promote the film and re-push the film for that online release. So that's something that, you know, we've been doing all along, and, you know, would, you know, most certainly work with a model where people, if people were having some kind of theatrical release, or as I said, if they were, you know, if it's off the back of their film festival release, or, you know, not even off the back of it, at the front end of their film festival releases, because, yeah, that's something that, yeah, we've been doing, yeah, forever.
Yeah, brilliant. And my final question, are there any film festivals coming up that you've got your eye on in particular, any that you're looking forward to attending in the next month or two?
In the next month, I was going to say Aesthetica, which isn't until November. because I'm looking through the entrance for those now. I'm trying to put together my comedy program and drama program. I did already mention Rocks. Hastings Rocks is coming up pretty soon, I think in the next couple of months or so. That's good. And then aside from that, I don't know, there's the big ones, you know, Encounters. It's always an absolute joy to attend. You know, I love that festival. So, and I think, you know, this year I might pop into Norwich Film Festival this year as well, and Leeds again, which is the back end of the year. Yeah, all mine are kind of very heavily weighted towards the back end, really. Yeah, I miss, I mean, everybody knows this, but yeah, South by Southwest, in March, I love, and obviously it's Sundance now where I'm not, and I'm feeling, you know, a lot of FOMO about that, seeing all the reviews come through from that. But
fantastic.
What about yourself? Any festivals that I should be on my radar?
Well, as we're recording, prepping to go to Clermont-Ferrand at the beginning of February, and like you said, Encounters and Aesthetica towards the end of the year. But yeah, there are lots. It's an environment where people are enthusiastic because a lot of these guys are seeing their work on screen for the first time, and that mood is infectious, it's contagious, and you have a great time when you go to a really good one that really supports the filmmaker. So yeah, hopefully we'll be able to experience that a few times over the course of this year.
Yeah, and where else do you have the opportunity to be able to watch a film and then immediately talk to the filmmaker directly afterwards?
Absolutely, yeah. I can't recommend it highly enough. If you have an opportunity, keep your eyes and ears open. Just Google what's near you, you know, you might find a small and established but nonetheless amazing festival just down the road. You never know. But Marbel, thank you so much for taking the time out today. Really, really enjoyed talking to you. You're doing fantastic work over there, you and your team. And we highly recommend anybody listening, if you haven't already, check out Director's Notes, directorsnotes.com. Generally, where can people tend to find you other than your website? How can people reach you on the socials? And
So we're everywhere. We're Director's Notes on, Instagram, on YouTube, as I mentioned, on TikTok. If you Google us, Director's Notes will be the top hit, and that page belongs to us. So, yeah.
There you go. Fantastic. Mabel, thank you so much once again. A pleasure talking to you, and we'll catch up with you soon, hopefully.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Mabel, Editor-in-Chief of Director's Notes, and our thanks once again to him for a great conversation and being so generous with his time. Well, that's our episode. Thanks so much for being with us on our first episode back. If this is your first time, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and many more. You can also catch every episode at cameolaunch.com/podcast. We've got more great episodes on the horizon, and as of February, we'll be publishing a new set of reviews in our Crazy Stupid Short season. This is a showcase of romantic short films that deal with the theme of love and relationships in original and innovative ways. It's a fantastic lineup that you will not want to miss. If you want to keep up to date with all things Cameo Launch, then follow us on the socials at Cameo Launch on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And of course, don't forget to head to cameolaunch.com for all of our latest reviews and interviews, and to sign up to our newsletter for regular updates. Thanks once again for joining us. You all take care, and we'll see you next time.